in the available for draft 2021 agency request legislation. This is a briefing only. When we get done with this item, we will break. I expect we'll have like to be done with this if possible by 12:30. That'll give the staff and the commission an hour for lunch before we move into the strategic planning briefing and public comment after lunch agenda. So, okay. There's Mr. McBride. Nice to see you.
Good to see you, Mr. Chair. So I jump right into it. Can you all hear me?
We can indeed.
All right. So I'll get to the presentation. Just a couple thoughts right off the start. First, good morning. Tom McBride, for the record, your legislative director. This item is a briefing on five policy items that have been vetted with the executive management team, but they're on for your review, not for action. The expectation is if you decide to pursue these, you would take that decision in your July-August meeting. Before I get into the five items that are ready for review, as the budget noted, there is going to be some other stuff coming up in the session. This kind of evergreen jobs issue is going to be, if we can pull off the economic benefits of restoration work and habitat restoration, it'll be a great thing. Those things likely involve the budget, but they also might involve some policy bills. We'll try to get you that language. The HPA streamlining for projects that'll involve restoration, that would definitely require an RCW to give us the authority to streamline those projects. So more is going to come back before the commission, hopefully well before your July, August, if we're going to ask you to make a decision on it. But a couple of them beyond the budget, there's a RCW chapter that just inaccurately states the law, state and federal, in regards to treaty rights and co-management. If the Attorney General's office wants to join with the commission in asking for a repeal of that statute, that chapter statute, I'm going to recommend that to you. I think it needs the Attorney General's office to be involved if you're repealing an entire chapter of the RCWs, but the language doesn't have any effect right now because it's inaccurate. Passed back in the mid-80s, basically says there are no treaty rights and there are no co-management status between the state and tribes. So if we get a green light from the AG's office, just a quick heads up that we'll bring that back to you. There's also this issue of OFM has said if there's any streamlining, if there's any reports you do that have outlived their usefulness or advisory committees that are in statute that go on forever, I think there's some cleanup we can do there if they give us that opening. We probably want to take advantage of that, but we'll certainly bring that back in front of all of you. I have to say, I'm going to take advantage of these couple minutes before the presentation because I sure like seeing a lot of different faces. The dog and I aren't getting along that well. I'm surprised by that, but I'm not. For Joe Pinesco, this is my second COVID hair shed. This is my youngest son's beard trimmer, as opposed to the dog trimmers last time. You can use either. And, you know, don't look too close, but they work out okay. So the five bills I want to talk to you about, there's a technical fix bill that actually I think is more fun than you may think. There's giving you as the commission indemnification authority with the federal government on construction projects, which is necessary, but also a little tricky to get through the legislature. There's a hunting and fishing recruitment bill, which is kind of a positive things we can do with our partners and kind of a post-closure environment. There's following up on our PILT commitments, which is important. And then there's the license buyback issue, which isn't probably a bill. It could have a bill tied to it, but it's probably more likely a budget proviso. We don't have language on that yet because we're meeting with the commercial fleet. The other four, we actually have draft language sent to the code revisor's office. The presentation is going to go through the one-page fact sheets. If you want anything additional, just tell me. But I do think these are all, it's a package designed to kind of show the face of the agency without driving a lot of budget numbers, because I was kind of hoping we weren't going to spend all our time on the budget this next session, but that's a little bit target gone by for all of us. So unless there's some questions, I'm going to share my screen. Okay, Mr. Chair, is there any questions before we get going?
No, please go ahead, Tom.
Okay. So. All right, has that shown up for all of you?
Yes.
Okay. Move this over here. So the first bill, the technical correction bill, as you all recall, we split the state wildlife account into an unrestricted revenues and restricted revenues.
Hey, Tom.
Keeping us from getting in trouble. There's one crossover in there that we have to technically correct where we have.
We are not seeing your slides, Tom.
Yeah.
We're not.
We are just seeing a delightful blue desktop background.
Yeah, it was on there a moment ago.
Move them back.
All right. Hold on.
There you go.
Are you back up?
Yes, sir.
Oh, this is interesting. All right. So this is a pretty straightforward bill. It's not substantive, but it will also get rid of an HPA fee that's no longer charged. There's no revenue in the account, so remove that from the statute. The reason I like this bill and I wanted the commission to know about it is this is a bill that will put us in front of the fiscal committees, House Appropriations and Senate Ways and Means, before they really get into negotiating the budget. And so the bill's not that significant, but the agency coming before those committees, talking about an issue, it generates questions. It actually brings us back into the loop of the budget a little bit early. It's kind of a craft or a strategy to having a bill like this in a session like this. So I recommend that one to you. I don't expect there's questions, but I'll pause for a second if there are. Okay, the second bill, this is the bill to give the commission authority to sign a contract where we agree to indemnify the federal government. And probably more specifically, this is the Army Corps of Engineers. This is something the federal government requires in any number of projects. It's not really negotiable. Why it's important to us is the Congress has approved $452 million for Puget Sound Nearshore Restoration projects. It's a three-part project in the state of Washington. The one that's furthest along is the Duckabush, moving the highway back and opening up that estuary. The other two linked projects are the Nooksack River Delta and the North Fork of the Skagit River Delta. Under this program, the federal government would provide 65% of the funding and the state would match 35%. This is probably unlikely to be a session unless we can make the jobs argument where the state's going to jump in with their 35% of $452 million. But in order to sign that construction contract, we have to be able to indemnify. The Department of Fish and Wildlife and the commission does not have that authority currently. It's pretty common. DNR has that authority in statute. Department of Transportation has that authority in statute. Anybody who builds a lot with the federal government involved has that authority. It's a little trickier than you might think with the legislature, because from their perspective, you as a commission would be making a decision to indemnify, say, the Army Corps of Engineer for any tort liability down the road. And so it's kind of a commitment to pay an unknown number down the road. They're nervous about that. It's okay. It's pretty straightforward on these type of construction contracts. It does not cover costs or damages that are awarded because of the negligence of the Army Corps of Engineers. It just doesn't put them on hook to pay for something. Say there was a contract or some other issue where the state might be on hook for the rest of it. So it's a really good bill. If we don't do that, this is one of those predicate steps to being able to do a big project down the road. If we don't do it, we stall out for another year while we go back to the legislature. So this COVID-19 session might be the right time to do these type of predicate issues. You as the commission would have to take this very seriously when it came before you on a contract, because it does potentially drive dollars, hopefully not. So it'll make a big difference. It's nice to have approved projects to go to the legislature and say there's a real reason why you need to give the commission this authority. So are there any questions about that?
Tom, Commissioner Thorburn has a question.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Tom. What I was not clear to me looking at the materials, would this only provide the authority for Army Corps of Engineer contracts, or would it be federal contracts that come before us?
Great question, Commissioner Thorburn. This would be for any federal agencies of the United States government. So if we were doing it with somebody else, we would also have this authority, or you would have this authority. So yeah, that's a good point. Otherwise it might be too narrow for us.
Commissioner McIsaac has his hand up as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Another indemnification question. So you mentioned just tort type things. So if in one of these projects, the Corps of Engineers has a massive oil spill, or you know, they block off a wild salmon run by accident for a year or two, that is not something we're indemnifying them against any fix or responsibility of. Is that true? Is that a way to visualize this?
So, kind of. So, say we blocked off a salmon run and there was damages associated with that. To the extent the Army Corps of Engineers was negligent and either 100% or 50% or 20%, this does not take them off the hook for that. But let's say it's a project where the contractor was 80% liable, the state was 10% liable, and the Army Corps of Engineers were 10% liable. What this would do is say Army Corps of Engineers only pays the 10. For the state, it's different because, yeah, we're only 10% liable, but say the contractor goes bankrupt, it's the joint and several issue. So the state would pick up the That's what the federal government doesn't want to do. It doesn't want to pay for somebody else's liability. So there's a state statute that says you cannot protect the federal government from its own liability, but we can make it so they don't have to share in what would otherwise occur in the project. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. And if we don't sign, they just don't do it. Is that right?
Right. This is a kind of a non-negotiable issue with the federal government because it's all 50 states. The third bill that I hope has showed up, this is the recruitment and retention bill. This is kind of the positive story. This one's kind of fun. It's working with our partners. It's really kind of nice to have something like this right after closures and reopenings. I'm going to scroll to the second page. There's really 10 specific changes kind of rolled into this. One of my favorites is the college students. If they're paying resident tuition, they can buy a license at a resident rate, even if it's a kid from Michigan or Texas or Florida. It gives the department some greater authority on bundling licenses and providing some different benefits and maybe some marketing opportunity. You'll see two poles in there. It marries up the ages for who's a youth for hunting and fishing to both of them under the age of 16. So it's all positives. The one thing I was nervous about was when we put this whole package together, was it going to have a fiscal impact? We think, and we're working with licensing, but at least preliminarily with all the puts and takes here, we see this as kind of revenue neutral. Hopefully some expanded opportunity. You may recall seeing prior slides about this issue where it talked about the aging of the hunting and angling population and kind of youth recruitment. There was a slide on that. I took it out of this presentation because we couldn't find where the data came from. And quite frankly, our state data shows those ages as being a level. Maybe if you went in and took a subcategory, like say big game, you might see some of that. But for overall anglers, overall hunters in Washington state, our average age of population is just level. So I think this is more about recruitment and retention and not age specific, but I don't see anything about this other than maybe this is a chance to have a lot of fun with our partners. Is there any questions on that? Okay. The next issue is familiar to this commission, PILT. As you recall, last session, there was a proposal to go in and make it permanent that the funding goes through the state treasurer's office. It did not go through. That wasn't based on opposition. It was just based on maybe it wasn't just a big enough issue to have enough momentum to get through the cutoffs. I thought we were going to be coming into the 2021 session asking for more than that, including to get rid of the choice by the counties of whether to choose open space or whether to choose to keep their fines, fees from fish and wildlife violations. The coalition that was formed in 2016, which includes the counties and conservation groups, it's really a great coalition, a big group. Given the COVID and the 19, they kind of want to just ask for the smaller piece of this, at least at this point, which is to ask the state treasurer to put in statute that that's how these payments go out. And you heard a little bit about that with the budget. This is something where this bill, even if it changed, everything within it would be something this commission has already approved as supporting. I talked to Dwayne Davidson, the state treasurer. He's supportive of this going through his budget. The other person who got involved last session a little bit was Dave Cook on behalf of the county assessors. He didn't quite understand the bill. He understands it now, and he's supportive of the bill. And so with the coalition, I think this is one where we need to follow up on this. The tax impacts on the local communities are real. And this you can see this is taking some of the controversy away from Lands 2020, certainly not all of it, but puts us in a better position. And it would be along the way to working exactly the same way DNR does by going to the state treasurer's office. So any questions about that? It should be pretty familiar to all of you. Okay. And the last one, and this is kind of a funny one to bring before you, but there's a chance it could have some RCW language. I don't necessarily think so, but this is the license buyback piece. You are all more familiar with it than I am. In 2013, the policy said that the agency will aggressively pursue a license buyback program. There was a proviso in last year's budget that was vetoed by the governor. Right now, we have people working with the commercial fleet to try to put together what a license buyback program would look like that would be somewhat acceptable to everybody involved. What I could see this being is a budget request somewhere between a $500,000 and $1.5 million. Probably a phased approach where at the start you probably get more interest from the inactive licenses, but I think have it open to both inactive and active, and then you learn what you can to move forward. I think the impediments that everyone's dealing with, which is why we don't have language for you yet, is it's a little hard to predict this when you don't know what the fishery looks like in the future, what's a viable fishery in the future, what are their commitments. So there's lots of moving pieces, but I do think it's important for the commission to put something to the legislature and the governor this year. And so this is a little bit of a placeholder, but also I guess I'm asking you to think about making a commitment that we are going to do something on license buyback or fleet right sizing or however you want to describe it this session. I think it's kind of important for our credibility that we have something on the table. And I'm hoping there's some questions on that, or if there's not, maybe that's a good sign too. But
I think Commissioner McIsaac may have one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to ask a little prelude here and then end up a question about what the language might kind of look like. So it is tied up a little bit in the ongoing discussions of the Columbia River policy, which does have a commercial fishery license reduction program, a buyback paragraph in the draft language that we're going to be taking up a little bit later in the meeting here today and is posted on the website. It's the same language that's been there in probably the last three or four drafts of this. So there is an intent to carry forward something about buyback of the commercial licenses because, as you noted, in the last policy, the 2013 policy, the initiative was not implemented. It failed, essentially, to move forward. What you'll see in the draft this afternoon, or if you have already seen it, because it's been the same for quite a while, is to work with Oregon on this. And it recognizes that you can't have a fully effective program to buy back commercial fishing licenses unless both Oregon and Washington are involved. And there might be statutory changes in both states required. And that there's a lot of difficulties in designing a concurrent and equitable program. I mean, back through time, there's been a lot of history of buyback programs that have just failed to do whatever people wanted, a lot of times because no one isolated an objective that it was supposed to achieve to start with. But it does say that if what's in the current draft of the policy goes forward and is adopted, it essentially says, sit down with the state of Oregon and get together on a joint program interstate-wise. I noticed that in the veto language this summer, what the governor's statement said was he's vetoing this in hopes that Oregon and Washington can get together on some sort of a program. So it was nice to see our thinking was aligned in that regard. So I know that as your slide shows here, there's been some work done to try to fertilize the ground a little bit so that plants can grow. But this commission has yet to deal with revised policy language that says, yes, we really do want to do better than we tried to do last time. But the connection with Oregon is pretty strong. And Washington doing something other than enable, if it got too specific, would then put us at loggerheads maybe with Oregon. And it doesn't make sense if you even bought out the entire fleet in Washington and Oregon's still fishing. What have you really accomplished there? You may have accomplished something for some of the commercial folks, but in terms of a holistic approach to fishery management, you know, it's just not a, everybody knows it's not a good way to proceed. So here's my question. When we ask for legislation to do something, what would that language look like? I mean, you've mentioned it's a matter of good faith to say we're looking to do something. I think we've proven our good faith already by having these advisory bodies work. We've proven our good faith by saying in the Columbia River policy endeavor that we're trying to keep it going. We're proposing that it keep going. We're proposing that it be a serious thing. So I'm having trouble visualizing in this next session, next January, before we even have reached agreement amongst ourselves of what do we want in the future, that what a bill language would look like if it goes beyond some sort of money thing.
Yeah. Commissioner McZeitz, it's a great question. And I think it's good that these things come out now while we're reviewing this stuff. I don't really envision there being a RCW language absent, some of the issues that come up are, if you sell your license back, can you rebuy another license and go back and participate in the same fishery? Some of those things, if they were going to be addressed, they'd have to be addressed by statute. What I really expect you to see is a proviso that is really part of the process, which would be probably a phase one, probably focused on inactive licensees. There's some people who want to sell those licenses, maybe test the waters on values. Oregon went through this a couple of years back. They set values pretty high, and the legislature didn't act upon those. I think you're right that doing this with Oregon makes more sense. The problem is if we commit to we're not going to put anything forward unless we have some agreement or commitment with Oregon, we won't do anything this year. And I do think there's probably a phase one or a preliminary part of this program that you could do now that wouldn't necessarily conflict with going down the road. So that's going to be your call, certainly. Mm-hmm. But I will say a good faith phase one that maybe our people and the commission and even Oregon doesn't view as handcuffing good policy down the road might be the smart way to go as opposed to doing nothing just because it's been a while. I'm the newer person here. And I'm not going to tell you all your jobs. I will say that one of the things we suffer from here is a presumption, I think, sometimes of a lack of good faith, which I don't think is true at all. But I do think if we could do something that moves the ball down the road that doesn't cause the problems you're talking about in terms of we can't deal with Oregon or we go down a path they're not willing to go, I think there's probably some stuff to do on that. I think that's probably, I'm hoping, easier to go down with the commercial fleet in the sense that it looks like fleet reduction appropriately. It looks like an early focus on inactive and then moving on to active probably is easier to go. So you have better people than me on this. Bill Twite and Raquel are working with the fleet. So, what they'll come up with. I will say my input to you is from a perception of the legislature is I think going back and saying we're not going to do anything because we're going to wait on Oregon, I'm not sure that goes down very well. Maybe we can't find anything reasonable to do, but if we can find something reasonable to take a step forward, I think that'd be, I would recommend that to you.
Let me ask a question about meshing the processes then. So we're currently on a track for this afternoon to consider releasing a public review draft for public comment and decide in August. This legislative proposal is a situation where we're hearing about it now, and can you refresh my mind on the timing to see if these things could mesh together? I thought I saw something earlier about September being a time when some sort of language might be due. So if we did, for example, agree on a Washington policy to pursue something on buyback in August, is that too late for this, or is it mesh okay, or what's the timing of all this?
I think you're going to be okay. If we had a bill proposal that we wanted to put forward, OFM would require it be somewhat vetted and submitted by September 14th. A budget proviso isn't the same thing, which I think is the more likely route here. I do think with the way the budget's going, we need to kind of telegraph where we're going forward. So that's why I saved this one to last, because it is the most complicated one to go forward. And I do think you have some time to integrate it. I'm not sure what Oregon's doing. You know, I'm not sure whether they participated with Washington when they ran their proposal a couple of years back. I haven't had any contact with them on this because we don't actually have a proposal yet that we feel like we can go forward on. I just think I would really encourage you to plan on doing that. And I think our team thinks they'll have something to put forward prior to September 14th.
Okay. Well, the biggest problem has always been identifying an objective that's supposed to be accomplished by the buyback. And I don't think Oregon was involved with us very strongly last time, but I'll just hope for the best on that. Sounds like the timing, if we stay on schedule, the timing could fit.
I think you're right on that.
You have anything else? Anything else today, Tom? That was really helpful.
Well, I hope it was. It's kind of it policy wise. It like I said, it's a package designed to kind of let us work with different parts of the legislature. Let us work with our partners. It's a little bit on the light end, but that was deliberate. Given once we got interrupted by the projected revenue reductions with the COVID-19, so a lot of things will come in, you know, hot and furious, but we have this kind of timeline crunch of if you're going to make agency request legislation, endorse that. So these were the five that seemed like they could go forward. And like I said, on that fifth one, it's certainly your all's call, but I do think I've been trying to stay in touch with our group working with the fleet. I think there's probably going to be something we can do going forward there. And I think there's a lot of benefit to doing that. And doing it smart so we don't tie our own hands up, but
sure.
I'd encourage that.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that. Appreciate the presentation.
Chair Carpenter?
I'm sorry, Chair I didn't Carpenter? See your, yes, Commissioner Thorburn, I didn't see your hand. Go ahead.
Thank you. Well, I just put it up. I wanted to just comment on the buyback proviso and the comments about you know, being unclear about the objective of this, which I think in the current policy, that it is kind of an unclear policy statement that we're going to buy back commercial licenses. However, I certainly, as one commissioner, am supportive of looking at buyback of inactive licenses of commercial fishers who really want to sell them back, as a first step. I just want to go on the record right now that I think as an objective, that's something I certainly can be supportive of.
Okay. Thank you for that. Any other questions or comments? Tom, thank you very much. And leave your dog alone this afternoon. Maybe feed the dog.
You got it. Yeah.